and welcome to the Swiss Info Program. I'm Susan Masika in Bern. Do you know what happens when artists hook up with scientists? They have strange-looking children, like a creature that's been roaming around Switzerland. Picture a man's body with the head of a Steinbock, which is German for ibex, that goat-like animal with the huge curved horns.
I'm a wandering ibex embodiment, so I'm exploring mostly, so I'm not sure what's going to happen. And I'm happy to interact with people, but I just sort of go with the flow.
The creature's name is Steinbockovich. Son of a witch? Yeah, it's the brainchild of Boston artist Edward Monovich. He came up with the concept long before Shaggy and shagging ibex characters made international news during a ceremony celebrating the new Gotthard rail tunnel. Animals are a recurring theme in Edward's work, and the alpine ibex is his current muse. One of his latest creations is the mask he was wearing on the day I met him in Bern.
The inside is actually a casting directly of my face, so I'm interested in this idea of transformation and a person's direct relationship to, in my case, my relationship to the ibex. I then painted the mask. This one is hand-painted, and I worked with the Swiss designer Denise Steiner on the... She's a wonderful seamstress, and she made the horns.
The mask is striking with its leathery black horns and bright orange eyes. Wearing the mask and carrying a bell, Edward, or Steinbockovich, I should say, walked around the fountain on Parliament Square. I thought he might scare the children, but most of them just smiled and waved. People snapped photos, and one man hurried over to shake Edward's hand and tell him that his star sign was Capricorn. In addition to Bern, Edward has also been to Basel, Zurich, Valais, and Graubünden. He says rather than being weirded out, people everywhere have been happy to see him. Maybe it's because Switzerland has a long tradition of masquerade parties. Or maybe it's because there's something special about spotting an ibex. Here's the artist on his own encounter with a real ibex in Canton Valley.
And I walked up and was observing this big male, very beautiful animal, photographing, drawing, just enjoying myself for about a half an hour, completely relaxed. He showed no signs of concern at all. And at the time, I had my mask with me, which has very large, it's a male ibex, and it has very large horns, probably as if he was maybe a 12-year-old male, somebody that would be a threat, and they're black, so they're very contrasty. So I put this mask on and went back and sat down where I was previously, and instantly this ibex whistles at me and then starts this very aggressive bobbing up and down of his head and is completely exercised and concerned. So my experiment of whether me wearing a mask would have an impact had an immediate impact. And I took the mask off quickly because I didn't...
Frightening the wildlife.
Yeah, I didn't want to scare him off. And I also, ibex are generally quite gentle, but there are some stories of them not being so. So not a wise thing to anger the wildlife, for sure.
He must have been really shocked. You probably thought, what the heck is this? You know, sort of a half man, half ibex.
And interestingly, when I took it off, he was fine again. So he just hung out for another 20 minutes.
But aside from impromptu animal behavior experiments, what's he really up to, this painter and professor from the Massachusetts College of Art and Design? In fact, he's doing an interdisciplinary project linking his artwork to genetic research on ibex. Edward, who earned a degree in biology before pursuing one in fine arts, got inspired by a paper in a scientific journal. The paper was titled Footprint and written by Lucas Keller, an evolutionary biology professor. Lucas works at the University of Zurich's beautiful Irkel campus. It's surrounded by a large public park with lots of boulders that would be ideal for ibex to jump on. Lucas and his team are studying ibex throughout the European Alps, in particular, how near extinction and reintroduction have affected their genetic composition.
Ibex were distributed across the Alps for millennia, and then with the invention of the firearm, the pressure on ibex populations began to rise. A lot of ibex were hunted, and already by the 16th century, but definitely by the 18th century, ibex had gone extinct in many parts of the Alps.
Were they killed for meat, or for their skins, or their horns?
For everything. They were certainly killed for meat. I mean, this is a time when the population in the mountains was poor, very, very poor. I think it's often hard for us to imagine how poor they were back then. So people needed meat. They hunted for meat. That was certainly one factor. But then, of course, they wouldn't use the skins, etc. But then it's also an iconic animal. Its horns were ascribed various medicinal purposes, also various other body parts.
So then they were at rock bottom, pretty much extinct. And then what happened?
So then they were nearly extinct and there was only one remaining population. We don't know how many animals, maybe 100, maybe less than 100, that survived in a little corner just at the border between France, Switzerland and Italy, but in what is now Italy. And there, the newly, you know, created state of Italy, the king of that new state created his own private hunting reserve, and it was a royal prerogative to be able to hunt ibex. And so they were protected very, very heavily and very carefully so that the king could go hunting. And that through that protection, they started to grow back and started to reach a certain sensible, reasonable population size of a few thousand individuals again.
And how did they get back into Switzerland?
So then is a wonderful story. Switzerland actually asked officially, the federal government asked officially the then king whether they could have some ibex for a reintroduction project that had been planned for decades in Switzerland. The answer was no. And so the Swiss hired poachers in Italy who poached these animals. These poachers, by the way, had a day job. The day job was that they were royal game wardens that protected the ibex, and at night they poached some too. Yeah, to Switzerland.
It's a double payment there.
That's right, double payment. And the payment was quite high, actually. If you calculate what the value of the money that these poachers received back then from the Swiss, nowadays would be a small car. So they got a lot of money. And what is even more surprising, at least to me, as someone who's naive about historical things, is that they didn't only just poach one or two or three or five animals. They actually poached somewhat above something like 40 or 50 animals. And they were all carried at night, you know, over the border and handed over to the authorities in Switzerland. And on the Swiss side, this became a federally funded, completely public, open reintroduction project.
But it didn't stop with that first group of illegal immigrants.
And then the Italian king was deposed. Mussolini came into power, and then the Italian government approved the request of Switzerland, and another roughly 40 animals, 50 animals, came across legally to Switzerland. So about 100 animals ended up in Switzerland, half of them legally, half of them illegally.
And they seem to have reproduced quite well.
They've done fantastically well. We now have about 17,000 ibex in Switzerland and about 40,000 ibex across all of the European Alps. So they've done extremely well.
However, inbreeding is still an issue for the alpine ibex.
Then when the Swiss authorities started to introduce populations in Switzerland, they didn't take all the 100, right, or offspring of all the 100. They just took 20 here or 30 there or 6 there. And that created in those newly released populations in Switzerland quite a bit of inbreeding. And we can see that today in the genetic pattern across the landscape in the Swiss Alps. And so we entitled a paper, actually, the footprint of the genetic footprint of the reintroduction of ibex, and this is what sparked Edward's interest in this project.
And are they then at risk again because they maybe have a limited gene pool? Do we need to worry about the ibex population?
No, there's certainly no reason to worry about them immediately. I mean, there is 40,000 ibex across the Alps. It takes a lot for them to go back to dangerous levels. But yes, they do have low genetic variation, not just because of the bottlenecks, this reintroduction bottlenecks here in Switzerland, but also the smallness of the population in Italy prior to them growing again. So alpine ibex as a whole, as a species, have quite low genetic variation. So it's present. The signals of low genetic variation are present. We see some consequences of it. But as long as the population is so high as it is at the moment, it's unlikely that they're going to go extinct because of that.
For Edward, the relationship between humans and ibex is especially compelling.
A lot of the scientific research that I'm interested in quantifies the way that human beings have impacted the ibex. So this footprint project of Dr. Lucas Keller's lab quantifies what's happened to the genetic makeup of these ibex, which is, you know, again, is an artifact of human beings having nearly killed off the species. Another paper that I'm using talks about introgression of domesticated goats into ibex populations. So again, this human involvement is critical. And me as an artist, I've for a long time have been interested in using animals for expressing the human condition. So So making myself into this animal is another way of investigating that relationship between the human and the ibex. So I'm literally making myself into an ibex hybrid.
As part of his performance art, Edward likes to highlight a scientific formula that relates to inbreeding and the influence of man on the environment. The equation is printed on his sweatshirt and on the cards he passes out to explain the project. Edward also has a graphic novel in the works. It'll be a brief history of the ibex and its role in Swiss culture. His sketchbook is filling up fast, and his ibex have remarkably expressive faces. Some of them seem to be smiling, and one's even whistling what looks like a merry tune.
I'm looking for that nice blend of kind of physiologically accurate but also fun. So the kids will be attracted to the story and learn more about this story of the ibex.
Biology professor Lucas is impressed with Edward's ability to capture ibex on paper.
I can't draw at all. So to see someone like Edward who comes out with us into the field and just in a few minutes, you know, can capture the heart and soul of an animal in just a few lines is incredibly impressive. But then, as you said, he also asked, well, what do you think? And what he asked me at one stage was about the coloring. So he was playing with how do you color an ibex in a painting so that you get the impression of an ibex. And it turns out he had to put blue into the mix. He had to mix some blue into the browns and grays and blacks. And I was completely fascinated. I mean, you would, as a biologist, I would never have thought of blue going, but there is blue in there. It's amazing.
Yet Lucas says that scientists and artists have more in common than you might think.
We're basically curious about the world, and you're trying to understand the world using very different methods, very different frameworks, but ultimately it's trying to understand something and curiosity about life or about, you know, various objects. But that's where we share. And that's, I think, also why this project is going so well, because we share this basic curiosity, in this case, about ibex.
The Footprint collaboration is made possible through various art and science grants. Edward and Lucas are working on a multimedia show that will feature video, photography, painting, and sculpture. It will be on display in Switzerland and in the United States starting in 2017. Thank you for listening, and thank you to studio technician Daniel Wheeler. I'm Susan Masika.